It's Saturday, June 9th, 2012. Thumbs up. Yay. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on Central Coast, California. This is KOSP Public Radio, and I've proved to you, of course, that we are broadcasting live. It's time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today on Geek Speak, we will be covering some interesting geek news, actually quite a bit of it, and taking your contributions to KOSP. I'd like you to make a fiscal contribution to KOSP at this time that makes sense to your level, meaning what you can afford per month. That's basically what it means, right? What KOSP means to you and such. And I suggest a $10 a month commitment. It's not that much money, but as we add it up, it really helps the station go. So don't forget that throughout the hour, and you won't forget, you can give us a call at 888-777-1507. And I do want to make sure that you know that we do still have $460 left to be matched by Sue and Charlie Franklin. So every dollar you contribute right now is dollar for dollar matched. In the air with me, I have Mr. Miles Elam. And Miles is a software engineer and political junkie. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And Bonnie Jean Primch, mediator, printmaker, and broadcaster at large. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
It's such a pleasure to have you in the air room. I don't think you've ever been on Geek Speak, have you?
I, Bonnie Jean Primch, have never been on Geek Speak by Bonnie Jean Primch, the end.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess when you've been like years ago.
I've just been with you in spirit the whole time.
We felt it.
Yeah, definitely. I feel loved by you all the time. I want to start off with some geek news about, 2 weeks ago we touched on the fact that Dish Network, that's the third biggest paid TV space behind Comcast and DirecTV, I think. Dish Network was being sued by some of the networks, by some of the media networks, Fox and NBC Universal and a few others, over their new ad skipping system, which they call Ad Hop, right? So it's the bloop, bloop, bloop of the TiVo. Can you guys do the bloop, bloop of the TiVo? Bloop, bloop, bloop. Is that going to sound? You know, everybody loves the TiVo because you can do that. You record your stuff. And any DVR, you can kind of do that. But specifically, Dish Network was making a button that was like Ad Hop. And it's been promoting that pretty heavily. And we all know that's kind of a problem for a space that's, of course, reliant on advertising. Anyway, Dish Network's chairman, Charlie Ergen, spoke to the Wall Street Journal about why he is supporting this feature. And that's interesting because it was kind of silent. And we assumed because the customer wants it and that's what they care about. His quote, "Ultimately, broadcasters and advertisers have to change the way they do business or they run the risk of linear TV becoming obsolete." And he also explained that the networks need to make more meaningful ads that you're not going to want to hop over. That's his argument for how to make advertising work in the TV space, if you will, right? So it seems the chairman, I'll do a little pre-cap of what I think his idea is from what I've read. People are spending their viewing time watching whatever they want online. TV has a lot of ads that people don't want to watch, and the networks are sitting on their hands, or at least they're ignoring the problem, and allowing home TV users to skip the ads improves their watching experience, which helps reduce the loss to the other forms of media entertainment. So, and here's another quote from him that really kind of, from the chairman of Dish Network. "I think the conversation is going to go a lot faster because now there is a risk of inaction as opposed to no risk of inaction." So I think he's putting the gauntlet down to tell the networks, change how you do it. What do you guys think about that?
It depends upon what media you're talking about. For Dish Network, it absolutely makes sense.
In what way?
Because they're, if someone has an internet connection, actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, if you have Dish Network, chances are you don't have the ability to have standard cable.
It's a good question whether if it's a fill-in for cable wired or not. Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, when you have, for example, I have cable internet, but I don't have cable TV.
Yeah, me too. Right.
And so that one I don't know because you're still paying the cable company for the internet access.
Yeah, I mean, and from the Dish Network perspective, he's focused on the TV revenue. But of course, he's getting paid two ways, right? He's getting paid by his customer base and he's getting paid, his content provider. He doesn't care whether his content provider to some degree gets paid, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. the stance. The thing that I find interesting about it is that you've got someone who's, this guy's interesting, this billionaire Charlie Ergen, is he's really frugal. He like eats at diners, right? He has pancakes for $3 or something like that at diners. He's a poker player and created this Dish Network with a poker buddy, right? He created the whole network. And it's a major network. It's the third biggest pay TV system mm-hmm. in the planet. That's kind of, well, at least in the United States. And he's also, and he's a billionaire, and he's also kind of an interesting guy. There's this great story about his daughter had to get braces, and so he went ahead and said, well, if you get braces, I'll get braces, to try to convince her. And she called him on it, and he had braces for a year and a half as an adult without the need, just so that he'd have the same experience as her, I guess. And that's kind of an interesting type of person, I think, that does
so
that.
So you're saying he's sort of an unusual businessman anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the big media companies are very stuck in their ways. And, you know, as a geek, I look at this and go, well, it's changing, and you better do something, because change is, you know, it's inevitable. It's not, yeah, it's not going to stay the same. And he's doing something. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that means anything.
And in his defense, like, it's not so much that people hate commercials intrinsically sometimes just because they're so banal. For example, when Super Bowl season comes around, I know a whole lot of people that go to watch it just to watch the ads. Yeah. They don't care about the game. They just watch the ads. Yeah. So there's a market for for that, apparently.
Well, yeah. It does seem, doesn't it, that, I mean, even those of us who can't stand commercials as a, you know, longtime public broadcasters, all of us, you have a certain sort of built-in disdain for commercials, but we appreciate creativity and humor. And that's that's something that I've enjoyed, you know, about advertising the whole time, is if they get me, or if there's something particularly clever, unexpected, or just creative about an ad, then I do not mind watching it.
Yeah. I watch a lot of, my TV habits minimal TV habits I do, I watch through Hulu or Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. Netflix, no advertising. Hulu, there's advertising in there. Yeah. And I find that extremely frustrating. There's no way to skip it without a real technical workaround, right? I mean, nobody's really skipping the Hulu ads. They're very repetitive. They're shorter than the network covered ads, and his perspective is that shows that the network's not really doing anything new, right? They're actually not creating a lot of content for that space, the commercials. They are clever, but you see them 12 times and you want to kill yourself,
right?
So clever only goes a certain way.
I've learned to keep the razor blades away from the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
This is interesting. A couple of times after the 10th time of seeing it on the same episode of a show, you're like...
The other thing that's really interesting about the Hulu kind of experience with those ads being inserted, or even all the networks kind of do it on their own site too, right? It's kind of Hulu servicing it, but is that they're extremely short. They're short enough. There's only two commercials, right? They're short enough where you can't really take a bathroom break without... there's no way not to watch it, really. I mean, I try. And I have no idea if the revenue stream for that is going back to the original creators in any way, right? Because that whole space is so new that there's not a financial distribution like the more traditional spaces where conceptually the artists actually get paid.
Isn't this all pointing to product placement within the content? I thought that's where we were headed.
Yeah. I think that's got to be, right?
Where's my flying car? You know, where's the product placement within the content? I mean, they are doing that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Superman eats Cheerios for breakfast.
Like, the biggest reason why I watch Hulu, of course, is... it's 30 Rock, right? And they do that jokingly, self-referential ads. But they're getting paid for the Snapple ads, right? I mean, it is happening. Yeah. So that kind of advertising definitely, I think, emerges. The other thing that's interesting to me about advertising is that in the early days of advertising, it was almost a news source. That's how people perceived it, right? You had the commercial for Tide, and, oh, there's a new product out there. That's how you found out about the product, right? TV was a big way of finding out new products. Mm-hmm. And so from that perspective, there was a little bit of news in there, in the sense that people didn't know about it beforehand.
Is that not happening now? You don't think that's happening now?
I think it's happening now, but I also think that we have it's much easier to find out what's new from lots of different ways, right? We find out what's new from our friends on Facebook. There's a lot of interconnectivity of data, and we can look anything up and kind of research it as well. So it's not like we just sit and wait for the newspaper to show up and wait for the TV to show up, and whatever's in there is kind of the reality we share. We have an ability to go out and find the reality we share.
But it's so exciting to hear that there's a new Doritos flavor.
Is there? Okay, I'll be back in a minute. All right.
Actually, something I just want to bring up a rant, because you brought up Hulu and the commercials there. Something that really annoys me, that you have this technology, you have an ad that you can't get past, and then they say, was this ad relevant to you? Yes or no? And yes. I can hit no.
I refuse to even acknowledge the question.
No, but I've actually tried this.
You can't legally get data on me like that.
Right. Oh, then I hit no. Repeatedly on the same commercial, and I still keep getting it.
No,
I don't want this.
Don't you see the technical person?
I don't have
a cat. Don't you have that image in your mind, Miles, of being that programmer that's doing this and going, "Why are we collecting this data? We need that data. Are you going to do anything? No. won't that upset people if you request the data and don't change anything? Like, I can see implementing and going, well, we'll have 400 commercials, and they'll choose the one they get. It'll get better and better, and yet nothing like that. Oh, I hate it.
We'll compile it later.
Oh, I hate it so much.
Go back in your corner, CodeMonkey, and get it done.
We've got another story about news, which is even creepier. We'll do that a little later in the show. And, Miles, you're about to cover something right after our
pitch. Yes, I'm going to cover the Flame botnet.
What is that?
You'll find out.
It's creepy, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Ooh. The government's in your computers.
Sounds dangerous.
Hey, KUSP is 2 years older than I am. And when the station was founded, FM was an underdog technology. AM radio was the king, especially as a commercial endeavor. And KUSP was not founded for profit, which was probably a good thing. Because in 1972, FM radio was anything but a solid business proposition. It was new and fresh. And things changed by the 80s and 90s. FM radios were commonplace, and many, many more people were commuting by car, listening to FM radio, of course. And conglomerates started borrowing hundreds of millions of dollars to invest in FM radio licenses. And then, of course, the investors that committed that demanded returns on their investments. And so now we're in this hyper-consolidated era. Big broadcasting companies are putting profit over public service in ways that were unthinkable, I think, even like 5 or 6 years ago. I think it's a newer thing. And news departments all over are getting a lot smaller. And they're going away altogether sometimes. And music formats that can't draw a mass audience that to promote, to hit those large targets are being tossed aside. Here at KUSP, we're totally different. We don't think that profit is the only measure of whether something should be on the air. Because you share the belief that the value of every human endeavor cannot be measured on a spreadsheet, we're counting on you to support during this campaign.
Yeah, it's pretty important. As John Hodgman has said very eloquently,
love him.
If you love something, then you should help fund it so that it can continue to exist and you could continue to enjoy it.
I heard that on one of the shows, too, from John Hodgman, and it was perfect. It's exactly right. It's like, figure out how they make their money.
He said that to Robert Pollack.
I think so. Yeah. That's right, Robert's show. Mm-hmm. And, figure out how to make that money, and then if you want it to stay around, make sure that they get money from you and that money that they get from you is connected to what they're doing.
And, we get it. It takes people a while sometimes. I've been listening to the Judge John Hodgman podcast since the beginning, and I still have not contributed to Max FunCon. Sorry, Jesse. I'll get to it.
But luckily you contribute to Robert's show.
I've been a supporter of KUSP for years. Right. I got it. We know it takes a while, but you've been listening for a while. That's okay. You can go to the phone right now. You can go to the web right now and make your contribution, because at this point, you who are listening right now to Geek Speak, you get it.
Yeah.
You understand what this business model is and how it works.
We've got a minimum goal for the show. It should be easy for us to get. All you have to do is pick up the phone or get online. It's $1,200 goal for the rest of the program. That's, 40 minutes. I think we can double that personally. And I want to see you guys help me challenge the station a bit. Let's get a little bit more than that. But $1,200 goal is what we think that we can do. And that means that we need you to do that.
I'm just going to go ahead and give the website and give the phone number so that people can make their way to their device and make something happen. It's KUSP.org. That's our secure website. The phone number is 888-777-1507, and that's a toll-free number. We don't want you to have to, put yourself out too much, you poor thing.
Yeah.
But do contact us now. It is the support that we're looking for in a solid financial way. We love that you've been listening for years. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And this thing really happens when you also contribute to it financially.
In the other room, Rick Philman, who normally answers tech calls, we promote on air. He's picking up the phone to take your contributions. You want to talk to Rick? He's got a Geek Speak shirt on, and he looks like he's ready to pick up the phone. He's a great guy. He's been volunteering for years with us to help make the show work, and he's one of those contributors, financially contributors, time commitment person, works for the shows. I mean, he's a great guy, and you have an opportunity right now to talk to him. 888-777-1507. Miles?
Yeah, got some thank yous out there. Peter, thank you so much. He's calling for Dr. Don. Thanks for that information. And also, we have a couple of pledges, anonymous pledges, one from Salinas, another from SoCal, liking NPR and Dr. Don. Thanks so much for your contribution.
Yeah, right on.
And we do have a matching grant. Another $400 of your money can be doubled thanks to Susie and Charlie Franklin. Susie and Charlie Franklin. That's what I do on the show. I mess up people's names that I respect. Last week, I messed up one of the geeks. Anyway. Susie and Charlie have taken some of their money and put it down to double your funds to help you contribute to the station. So please do take advantage of that. 888-777-1507 is the number. Miles, what's creepy about this flash virus thing?
Well, it's actually a botnet. It's not just the virus. It's the fact that it infects a bunch of computers and then keeps going on. You have a central point of command and control.
So that's commonplace for viruses nowadays. They kind of make your machine into a one of the tools that can be used by other people.
Right. That's to send spam or whatnot. But Flame is a little bit different in that it was, A, written by a government, namely ours.
Okay.
Has that been established for sure net now? Because I know it's been kind of like the popular assumption.
Yeah.
But is that solid now?
That seems to be solid now.
Okay.
I mean, it's possible that someone is setting up the federal government to show that.
Oh,
but I think we're kind of taking it as read to the government. And the reason is it's very well written. But go on.
And its purpose, instead of, you know, sending spam for Viagra, in this case, is cyber espionage. Mm. To get onto various computers, check to see what they're putting on there, check the various contents. And what's interesting about this one is the fact that when many antivirus vendors went back to see, you know, was this out before? Did we see that? Was this on machines before?
It was discovered recently. Notice? Yeah.
Yeah, it only came out recently. But 3 or 4 years ago, when they have the samples from various computers, yeah. They still see this virus. They just didn't see it.
I mean, it's been there for 3 or 4 years.
But they didn't actually weren't detecting it for 3 or 4 years.
And that's actually pretty uncommon for viruses, right? Normally,
yes,
we figure them out,
so.
And then you know they might keep spreading them and that kind of thing. But we kind of know about them. So when you update your antivirus, you're fighting it. But this one, 3 years or so, totally free reign.
Right.
How could they achieve that?
Because they were banking on something that's along the lines of trusted computing. In other words, they were taking a certificate. And signing an application. The idea behind that is that you're a reputable organization. You get a certificate from a certificate authority, and you write your program, and then you wrap it, if you will, in this signature.
And it's something that Microsoft does. This is a Microsoft endeavor, so that other companies can write code, get it certified through Microsoft, get it signed, and now Windows machines trust it because Microsoft says that's trusted, and they actually have a copy of the code. And they were able to whoever made this flash virus, the federal government.
Flame,
was able to replicate that signing process to pretend like it's been approved by Microsoft.
Exactly, through a vulnerability in the MD5 cipher, which was part of that certificate signing process, which
unknown,
MD5 is actually...
A known vulnerability?
No. There's actually a lot of literature where MD5 is not very strong, considered very strong anymore. You need to combine it with something else or just use something better. But... This virus, this botnet, was actually exploiting a vulnerability of MD5 that no one knew about before. In other words, new uncharted territory that mathematicians in the public sphere had never seen before.
Wait, what are you saying, Miles? You're saying that they found like a loophole in the code or something that they were able to
imagine someone makes a door lock, like a padlock.
Okay.
Something like that. And some people have made a type of lock picking kit. And they're like, well, if I use this pick, I can get this lock to finally edge its way open in an hour.
And everybody kind of knows about that one.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a known thing. But then this group came in and said, actually, we know about smacking the door on the left side and it opens. And no one knows about that
for years. Smacking on the left side it wasn't necessarily faster, but like, you know, for a half hour, and then it just pops open. Something that is without using a combination or without using the established key.
And the secret that no one else knows about. That's the thing that's a new vulnerability, is that it's been a problem the entire time, and only this group has seemed to take advantage of it. Which
so it's
means
not
that
like it was designed in there.
No.
No.
Total accidental thing they happened to find, but the thing that's interesting is no one else found it, and they didn't share it. Normally, a lot of hackers, when they find stuff like this, one of the things they do is go, hey, problem. And that's a common way for us actually to find out about problems and vulnerabilities in software. The people that are cracking
that in academia. Academia,
yeah,
they just go through there, and it's someone's thesis to be able to say, hey, I found
so this federal government, just yeah, a federal government made it, the U.S. federal government made a botnet virus device that was very different in the sense that it's been around for 3 years with no one knowing about it. It took a response, a vulnerability that no one actually really knew about. And on top of that, it does one other thing that's interesting.
It can remove itself. So it can remove all traces of itself on command. There's actually a command that they,
spy-like.
A built-in suicide feature.
Yeah. I was wondering if that suicide feature, like, you know, if you haven't been online for more than 2 weeks, kill yourself, right? This like, I can just imagine that the cyanide chip in the tooth is kind of what that's like, right? Just disappears, no problems.
Or that they got the information that they wanted, and now they want to make sure that the people don't know that they got the information.
I love this story, Miles, because we have said... for years, well, you know, the virus, update your virus protection because then you're okay. And, you know, there's a lot of people, if you don't know if there's a virus or not, you listen to the show, we'll talk about new ones and stuff. And the entire time there's been this kind of, and of course the federal government might be doing something we don't know about. And they are, which is kind of amazing. You don't normally wear the tinfoil hat thing, but yeah, that's the time where you're like, wait a second.
Yeah, people keep saying that the government can't do anything right. This is proof positive that they can.
For at least 3 years.
They're quite competent.
It does kind of mess with my, you know, sort of automatic dismissing of conspiracy theories of all kinds because my line has always been, there's no way that the government is coordinated enough. It's full of selfish individuals who are waiting for their pension. There's no way that they're pulling off something this extravagant.
The interesting thing, of course, for this kind of thing to take place, you probably need about 150 people. You know, a company like that with really smart people and keeping them quiet and doing this, they could do this, right? I mean, that much power, that's a lot of brain power to put in a space. And that's something that they can do quietly. So it's interesting. It's not a situation where you've got thousands of spies out there collecting data on people's homes, which would be unthinkable. But it's because of the ease of computers and the vulnerabilities that exist in them that allows a government to be so creepily in your business.
So the tinfoil hat set might be enjoying some glee here in the coming decades.
And this may be the opening salvos.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that it is a special, very special pledge drive edition of Geek Speak, and we're still on that $400 mark for the Susie and Charlie Franklin matching gift. This is $400 that's just floating out there waiting for you to match it with your contribution of whatever amount, up to $400 to be matched. But nothing's happened with that thing since we started talking about this virus. So we're really looking forward to you hopping on over to the web or to the phone and making your contribution, pal. You can do it. KUSP.org. Or 888-777-1507. Sorry, fellas, just wanted to mention that.
Thank you so much. And I'll just mention
when the numbers move.
I'll just mention also that we're looking for a value that you can afford. Yeah. And I think a $10 a month value is totally fine. It's actually not, you work out the math, it's not that much money for hours of content that you participate in every week. 888-777-1507. So my next news story has to do with more kind of creepy things. This is Intel. So we all know Intel, right? Intel chips are everywhere nowadays. And Intel,
if you have a Pentium processor or a Core processor, then you have
If you have
Intel.
A Macintosh or a Windows machine, you basically have an Intel, except for these low-end ones, but we won't get into that right now. But they're a major company. And they have been quietly working on this project, which is basically more virtual television service. So it's an online streaming service, kind of like a lot of companies produce this, right? Netflix and things of that nature. And Intel's getting in the game. Now, Intel's getting in the game with a hardware change that's going to be a set-top box, what it looks like, a set-top box, and it'll provide streaming content to you. And right now, they're trying to build up what base of companies that produce content will actually be on the device. And they're saying, give us this content for cheaper so we can give it to the audience cheaper because we have a special ability to make ads more targeted. And Intel really does have a special ability to make ads more targeted. And all they're going to do is have a camera on the front of this with facial recognition of the watchers of the TV. So now they'll know what gender you are and what age you are approximately and probably a little bit of what race you are. And the ads can be very specifically targeted to that. So you won't get the beer ads when there's only kids in the room, right? No matter what the content is. So what could be wrong with that? Is that creepy or what?
Creepy profile. Like, how insulting would it be to get ads that are sort of based on some sort of cartoon idea of who you are based on your appearance?
Yes.
Gross.
Exactly.
Gross.
And the whole perspective of, like, some big corporation having an eye on you in your home.
Yeah, that's super creepy.
Yeah. And I'm sure the TV would be free. You get all the channels.
Oh,
right, but right, okay. Right. Because now the ads really are for you.
Yeah, let us just bring the Flame spy bot directly into your. Just say yes to it because we're giving you a free bauble.
Yeah,
and this is coming in over IP. I'm assuming.
Yes, completely over IP.
Which means that there is no anonymity about who they're going to. They may not know your specific name, but they can get metric data like the average household that has an internet connection has. You know, this many adults, this many kids.
I do, up at UCSC, in the programs I'm in, we do a lot of camera detection, facial detection stuff. And you can easily detect whether there's a dog in the room and a cat. And since you'll have an IP address, which though it changes, but also the box will probably have a unique number, you can kind of keep tabs on what kind of beings exist in that space, right?
And so they don't have any control over which of their demographic information they choose to make available.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a very interesting thing. Like, first off, it's kind of cool if Miles had in his house that he doesn't have cats, as you said earlier. You do have dogs, and your TV would know, and you wouldn't see any more cat commercials, but you would see dog, you know, commercials for your dog.
Yeah.
Do you want
well,
that service?
Well, one dog and a whippet.
Yeah. That's nice. Half a dog. So the thing is, this does solve that problem of how, you know, commercial space is going to get paid for. I mean, that's one solution, but it sure is creepy. And now, of course, it'd probably also come with Skype, right? You'd have Skype built in, because why not? Do video chats built
in
your TV.
So then they
and
the device, look at who else you're video chatting
right,
to.
And the device is, you know, these things are going to cost under $200, so they might as well make them free. So they're going to give it to you for free. So it's like you get in this space where, well, Intel, you know, would either, you know, charge the device or charge for the service or something of that space. It's creepy, and it's probably coming around the corner. And it's not a technology. I mean, you could definitely put up photographs in front of the camera and kind of emulate that there's people in the room and decide to watch any ads you want, which is good. I kind of want to hack with one. But, Miles, we were chatting earlier.
Yeah, the cat's out of the bag with regard to face recognition software. It's only going to get better. You know, soon you're going to be having it so that your phone will detect who it is that's trying to answer this phone and, you know, have locks based on that or unlocks. And that type of thing, it just seems to me that technology is not going to give an answer to this problem. It seems like we do need actual privacy legislation.
Yeah.
Something that actually says you can do this with someone's data, but you can't do this. And that seems to be sorely lacking right now.
The market is not going to create a solution to this one.
Right, exactly.
I would agree.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me, and I'm so creeped out right now.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish and using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointments, crowns, and veneers. Information is at RamirezDDS.com. Miles, you have a geek bit? I've got one if you've... I'll let you look it up. And I just want to mention Shapeways. So technology can also be really awesome. Do you know Shapeways?
No, what are you talking
okay.
about?
Okay. Shapeways is a website which... Now, geek bits, what we do is we kind of talk about something you have to kind of see. But here's the site.
Oh, okay.
Shapeways.com. You can get to it from geekspeak.org. So just go to geekspeak.org. Go to KOSP first and pledge, and then go to geekspeak.org.
Yeah, please.
What it is people submit 3D models of small objects. I'm talking about objects smaller than like a toaster. That's size space.
Oh, it's like a 3D printer to order.
Yeah.
It's like a 3D printer cafe press or something.
Exactly. Okay, right. Okay. So you get to make a model and then you put the model up there and then people can buy your model and the company will print it in plastic or stainless steel or bronze and send it to you. And the rates are kind of crazy cheap. But now you can make a doodad crazy cheap in the sense that, you know, an iPhone case is $9, which is kind of like what an iPhone case is.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And the thing that's interesting is that you can submit your designs. They've got tools to create yourself. There's a great little jewelry one where you really print out a sheet and you draw a picture with black and white shade. And then you take a picture of that and send it to them. And they then create a model from it, which you can test. And then they print the earrings for you. So really awesome in the sense that you get physical material from your sketches. And you don't have to pay a machinist to make a mold for you and do all that process that, you know,
sorry,
you can
machinist.
Do.
Bye-bye, machinist.
Yeah, 3D printers have just made this space really work, which is cool. And, of course, all the designs that are up there, just like Cafe Press, you know, the person that made the really cool Thorn dice, is like a D&D rolling dice, you know, are you can get them in metal, and they're really cool looking. Mm. And, of course, you can, you know, make your own as well. Anyway, that's Shapeways. That's my geek bit for the week. Miles?
Yes, I do have some thank yous. I'm going to start off with a haiku. The geeks did okay. The phones rang. People answered, and nothing blew up.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Speaking of a geek bit, Sandra from Hollister says thank you. And she actually did that from the site, which you can go to at KUSP.org. Lori from Aromas, thank you. And from Scotts Valley, Helen and Don, thank you so much for supporting KUSP.
Okay. So you know what that means is that there's $300 left on that match from Susie and Charlie Franklin. I just wanted to point that out. There's still $300 worth of dollars that you could contribute to KOSP and have them be matched dollar for dollar and help out the station.
And you can do that right now, 888-777-1507. We're stepping back into news in just a minute.
A Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by the Carmel Bach Festival, a celebration of music and ideas, July 14th through 28th, featuring over 70 events, including Sergei Rachmaninoff's Vespers, conducted by Andrew McGill. Full details and tickets at bachfestival.org.
That was so beautifully done, Bonnie. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I want to mention that traditionally when we do pledge drives on Geek Speak, calls come in at the last minute.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is we talk so friggin' fast you can't think. And I'm so sorry about that. I want to slow down for just a second to really suggest that you take a time to call, because the people on this phone will be patient and calm and not like me talking a mile a minute. So please call in, make fun of how fast I talk. They'll agree with you. 888-777-1507. And we're just asking for a pledge that fits your budget, something that makes sense to you. Miles, news. Oh, and Miles Elam and Bonnie Jean Primpsch are in the air with me. I'm Lyle Troxell. There's that too. Go ahead.
LinkedIn, been in the news lately. They're a social network site basically for the business world. So think of it for Facebook and the corporate world. They had a little bit of a break-in.
I didn't hear this.
So,
do you mean to their facilities?
No. Well, yes.
Really? Not a virtual. The building? Is there
not a physical break, but it is inside the building. It's just the servers inside a building that they broke into, where they got 6.5 million passwords.
Wait, why were the passwords in the clear?
They weren't in the clear.
Okay.
They were actually...
they were encrypted with Indy 5 hash and it was able to be detected.
Because, no.
No.
But it was encrypted with SHA-1, which is also a hashing algorithm that is not strong enough anymore.
So did they grab the SHA-1 passwords? Is that what they did?
Yes. Okay. But it gets worse.
Yes. Were they not salted?
They were not salted.
Oh.
No, what? Hold on, guys.
What does that mean?
Are we talking about making hash browns? What is this with
salt?
Hashing and salt?
All right. I'll try to do it. Miles, you
if
correct
you
me if I'm
mind,
wrong. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Here.
So your password, which is 12345. Hey, yeah. That's a password in my luggage. right. It's not that, right? It's something else. But it's something probably relatively common that a human brain can understand.
Yeah.
The way we protect those so that someone working in the company can't just look up your password is we encrypt it. We run it through an algorithm, which makes it a very random, crazy thing that you can't really read and memorize. But now it isn't just that simple password. And that thing that it makes, you can't type that in to log in as you, right? So it
you
is...
You can't type in the goofy thing.
The goofy thing you can't type in, right?
Okay.
You've got to type in your real password, and then the goofy thing is generated, and then that's referenced against what they store.
Okay.
So they're not really storing your password. They're storing a mathematical algorithm to your password.
Got it.
But here's the problem. If I make 12345 as my password and we make the goofy system and you make 12345 as your password and we make a goofy system, our goofy numbers match.
Uh-oh.
So therefore, if you get thousands and thousands of millions of passwords and you just start looking for passwords that seem to match ones you've generated, you can figure out what they are.
Yeah,
so
and
all
if they're
you
very common, chances are they are of the type that are like... the password is password.
Yes.
Or the password is 123456 7.
Or it can be a little bit simpler, right? Your dog's name is Lulu, and so it's Lulu24. Well, Lulu24 is not that hard to make a passphrase off. So people make what these call these rainbow tables. And they just think of every word and every combination they possibly can. They make 20 million of them, and then they encrypt them. They make the funky number on that. Mm-hmm. And then you get that funky encrypted number, which you then look in the database to see if anybody's used those passwords. So you reverse the process. And the way you solve that from a technical perspective is instead of taking your password 12345, I actually store what's called a salt. I have another crazy number like 9,474 Lula Dog 4.
And it works with that algorithm.
So now I take your password and I take this special salt that's only for yours and I make my new funky number out of the two combined. So now the only way for me to get that strange funky number that I'm looking for is to get a password from you and this bit of information that I store with your account. So the crazy number that we make is unique to you, even if your password is the same password as someone else.
Oh, I see.
That's kind of it. I know that was kind of fast.
Okay.
Again, call 888-777-1507 and Rick will take more time.
And if you didn't get that, that's okay because most programmers don't get it.
That's right. In fact, they didn't get it, right? LinkedIn didn't get
Well, no. That's a system thing. You don't have to understand the algorithm. You just know how to use it and they didn't use it correctly. This is
did the voodoo wrong or whatever.
Yeah, if you're a sysadmin, you don't do this.
They didn't help make everybody's password unique, which they have to do.
And
so they used the wrong salt.
They didn't use a salt at all.
Oh, no seasoning.
No seasoning.
Right.
Aww. And that's the problem.
So a lot of those encrypted passwords all looked the same.
Okay.
And so they're able to see where.
Yeah, we've also seen companies say, well, you know, we'll just use the same salt for everybody. Which doesn't work either, because then all you have to know is what the salt is, which you would know for everybody, and you can look it up.
Yeah.
But it's actually really hard to crack the system if you don't
regenerate
them.
If you use the same salt for everyone, then the password digest would still look the same.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. You have to have unique salt.
So somebody broke into the servers at LinkedIn and realized there was no salt and it was a free-for-all.
And took all the took all those encrypted passwords, but were easy ones to figure out, exactly.
And actually, like, cracked them and posted them online to say, like, yeah, this is...
Look what we can do.
Yeah. So if you have an account on LinkedIn, even if you have a great password,
it's over.
Change it now. If you haven't received the email from LinkedIn, which they've sent...
If you've used that password and shared it with other sites, like your email address, you're really in bad shape. because LinkedIn also stores your email address. And if you have the same password as your email, now anybody online can go check your email. So this is why we say make good passwords. Yeah. It's hard to do.
And if you want to know how to make good passwords, we have a show about passwords.
You know, I knew you were going to say that, but it's so hard to find our shows.
Yeah. How do they get to it?
I'll link to it from our show today, geekspeak.org. I'll find it. Today's show is June 9th, 2012. I did it!
Yeah, there it is.
We should just put it like as a static link on the top of our page. Just like, this is the password.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Really? Because at all times, really. I mean, frankly, every time I tune in, you're talking about how idiotic people are with their passwords. So.
But and so am I.
It's not idiotic. They are human with their passwords. I don't consider it idiotic.
Okay.
Asking you not to be human. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. There are ways to make essentially unbreakable passwords.
And one of the
all practical purposes, except that it's so hard for a human being to deal with that password.
But keep in mind that everybody, all the suggestions I have is make it more complicated for you to memorize too. And that's exactly the wrong way to do it, right?
Mm. That just makes people write it down.
Right. But we're really good at memorizing phrases. And I highly suggest if the password field allows it to be long, I know it's kind of a pain, but use a long password. And don't use a random number password because you won't remember that. Instead, just, you know, think of your Aunt Betty, and Aunt Betty likes to knit, and your password is, my Aunt Betty likes to knit. And then add a number, like your college graduation number, the number that you always know, right? So I'd put in 92. My Aunt Betty likes to knit, 92. I'll remember that, and it is not an easy thing to crack. In fact, this rainbow thing, LinkedIn thing, it wouldn't have been one I found.
Really?
Oh. Right, because it would have taken so long to create that sentence, they wouldn't have done that.
Now, can you make better passwords? Yes. But we're not talking about the best passwords. We're talking about an easy enough password for people to remember that they will use.
And better than your neighbors.
Yes. And that is better than saying, throwing up your hands and having a password that you can't remember so you write it down. Or a password that you is using password as your password.
Absolutely. Not such a good thing to do.
Hey, you guys... I'm pretty excited that I'm here with you today on GeekSpeak. This show's been going on for years.
11 years or so that I've been doing it.
And I've been here since what? Like the millennium, mm-hmm. right? So 12 years. The station's been here for 4 decades, man. And we're gearing up for our 5th decade.
That's amazing.
I know. I'm just marveling at it because it's been happening the whole time because of this bizarre model of just asking the people who pay for the radio station or who listen to the radio station to pay for it. At this point, well, like more than half of our budget is just people doing that. People going, yeah, you know, I listen to this station for free as much as I want, but I'm going to pay for it anyway. 40 decades of that, and we're headed
Four decades.
40 years of that.
Yeah.
And we're headed for our 5th decade. It's fantastic.
It's amazing. And it really is as simple as the people that decide this is important to me paying for it. But because they want to, no other reason. And that is kind of amazing.
It sort of defies, like, you can't really machine that.
You know what I mean? I was listening to Dawn's show earlier. Yeah, I was listening to Dawn's show earlier because I try to listen to that as much as possible. She's amazing. And I'll be on it next week, actually. We're going to talk together. We're going to do a little joint thing, which would be fun. And one of the things they're mentioning is that 7,000 people contribute currently to KUSP financially. Yeah. That's a small percentage of who listens, of course.
It's a small percent. Is it 10%? It's tiny.
But it's kind of amazing that 7,000 people in our area say, this is important to me, and it's so important, it's financially important. That is pretty uplifting.
Like 7,000 altruists.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the federal government might be spying on us. But
who, incidentally, are paying for everyone else, as opposed to if we had 20,000 people all pledging $5.
Yeah. That would do it. That would handle it. Yeah.
You guys would have staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys.
Just for your radio
just
show.
Just to make it clear, you don't need to throw out. I mean, we welcome if you throw out a huge number. We welcome if you throw out $100 a month or something like that. We welcome that.
It's delightful.
But at the same time, if all you can afford is $5 this pledge season, send in $5. We'll gladly take it.
Yeah, and you will have an amazing feeling doing that. I was raised in this station. You know, as a kid, I used to run around here, right? So I have this kind of personal connection that most people don't have. But when I actually became an adult and started making my own money, I contributed 1 year, and I haven't stopped because it's awesome to go, oh, more than just kind of being there and having a community, I'm saying this is important to me, as is my rent, as is my phone, as is my coffee in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of those things that makes my life better. And therefore, I don't want it to go away. I want it to contribute. And boom, I put in money in. And I had a completely different perspective on the station. And I love that feeling of ownership of the station. And you do get that very easily by just picking how much money you want to choose to do that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you get the same goodie whether or not you contribute a bitty bit or a gigantic wad.
That's right, because you decided how much it is. Right? It's pretty cool.
I helped produce this thing, man. This is my radio station, too.
And we are all volunteers. We're not getting paid for this. The money you're spending is not going to our salaries, sadly. we've made significant capital investments in the broadcasting technology. Our transmitter on Mount Toro, here in the studio in Santa Cruz, packet-based audio.
Yeah, the new board that I'm sitting in front of was a complete redesign that we got funded again by matching grants from you, the listener. Mm-hmm. And both the studio and the production room and the across have a completely new system, which allows us to, it actually allows us to keep going because the old system was at the point where it had to be replaced. But it's also, as Miles says, packet-based, and we should probably do a show about the tech of this because it is pretty amazing.
Well, and because people have been giving so generously over the years, we've been able to really position ourselves to be a responsible provider of content going into the future.
Yeah.
From redoing our studios to getting our website ready for the technological whizbangery to come.
What is happening right at the website was newly launched is really great. It allows people like me that aren't tech people but are doing shows to have a blog, to keep a dialogue going, to have a podcast happening, and basically continue servicing in new ways that, you know, traditional FM radio hasn't online. And so we have a very cool space there at QSP.org, definitely.
This end of fiscal year campaign, that's what we call it, the end of fiscal year.
That's why we're talking about this stuff.
Yeah, is your opportunity to ensure that KOSP will continue to be vibrant in the years to come.
Yeah, so the thing to do then is to simply make your contribution to the radio station. There's still, I can't believe this, I can't believe that there's still money on the match from Susie and Charlie Franklin.
Yeah.
Come on, guys, $300 left on that thing. How much of that can you take out with a chunk of your money right now? At KUSP.org, go to 888-777-1507. We're here for you. We'd love to raise $1,200 this show. We'd love to see if we can exceed that, but right now it's not happening. It happens when you stand up and say yes to this whole idea of public radio, of a place where we can broadcast and continue to be a responsible place for actual information and entertainment in this media environment. It's possible because of individual contributions.
Yeah, it's like a 401k plan. It's like you put in $1 and the company matches with another dollar. It's free money. Why wouldn't you? If you give to KUSP now, every dollar you put in is a dollar that's matched dollar for dollar by someone else. It's free money.
KUSP.org, 888-777-1507. You know what to do.
888-777-1507. Miles, next news story, sir.
Sure. What I have right now is a story about Japan after the earthquake and tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's an event called LinuxCon. It's a Linux operating system. A bunch of people get together. They like it. And so they talk about it and try to sell their wares and stuff like that. Well, last year's wasn't all that extravagant, considering Japan had just suffered a major catastrophe. Well, Japan has bounced back somewhat. They're coming back. And they have come back, LinuxCon, with a vengeance. And one of those things has been technology related to how do you deal with disasters. Unfortunately, you have this chicken and egg thing where many times the disasters where they hit the hardest are going to be the places that don't have the infrastructure to handle them. The Haiti's,
the trailer parks.
Right, things like that. But that's not where the money is, so you don't have the research going on to take care of that. Well, now a disaster has hit a major wealthy nation. And so they're now focusing that attention on how do you deal with those disaster areas. And one of those is a remote controlled, low cost robotic plane that reports damage in hard to reach disaster areas.
Oh, what a fantastic
That goes
idea.
And scouts, scouts out. And so you see a lot of, you're seeing a lot more of this technology that's going out and about that's low cost, so you can make a whole lot of them and send them out in a lot of different directions and
imperil find, no lives.
Yes, yeah. and find out where people need help, mm. where you need to concentrate your efforts,
yeah.
and how to save more lives. And it's a great use of technology, and it's a great result that has come out from such a horrible event from a year ago.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that technology, the recognition technology, is the same one we were talking about creepily earlier being in your home.
Wait a
right?
minute. No, I like it.
So in some sense, it is, right?
Right. The same technology is out of the bag. The technology is there. The genie's out of the bottle. Yeah. What we need now is just ways of using it for good, not
right.
for...
And
I don't want to say evil. Let's just talk about not necessarily
but
what
I like,
you prefer.
I like it when we see the really beneficial aspect of this, right? It's not just that you can get a ticket even when a policeman's not there because there's a camera on top of the pole and it checks your license and sees whether you cross it, which none of us really like, but we kind of also like it because it makes the street safer. And it's not just that Intel's going to put cameras in our homes and watch us. It's also that we have technology that's allowing us to save people.
Right.
Right. And it's the same technology, exactly.
Right. The technology
does not have
not,
a moral aspect to it. Yeah. You know, how we use it, of course, does. I sound like a gun lobbyist, unfortunately. But we use this recognition stuff a lot at work, as I said earlier. And
for art
context, to think about the world differently. But it's interesting because I see it so much, the cutting edge of it, of what can actually happen, right? That you start kind of thinking about it being everywhere all the time, which it can be. Like, there's no reason not to. Like, all the security cameras we have every place are being fed in, right? That could have a poor computer behind it, knowing how many people cross and how many people with brown hair cross. And that's not a hard thing to happen. And it's going to happen. So
yeah,
it's important that we think about it.
Your comparison with the gun lobby actually made me think of technology doesn't creepify you.
People creepify you. Absolutely. Absolutely.
People using technology.
So we cover Facebook stories a lot. And Facebook recently got a court order from the UK's High Court to reveal the identities of some people on Facebook and what they were doing, who they were, what their email addresses were and such. And right off the bat, it sounds, okay, wait a second. Do I want that to occur? And the reason why it was approved is basically it's all about Nicola Brooks, who appeared at the court and she said she was falsely labeled a pedophile and a drug dealer by fellow Facebook members. So basically some people decided to start harassing her, right? They put up a page about her and claimed all these things and made an identity of her. Mm-hmm. She wasn't on Facebook really, right?
Okay.
So her identity was being propagated by Facebook as this completely false libelous thing. And so it looks like Facebook's going to say, okay, yeah, well, we will provide the names and addresses and everything we have about these people that were doing that.
Okay.
Which is to some degrees cool. And it reminds me that we don't have laws that really cover this very well, right?
Yeah, it reminds me of why I joined Facebook in the first place. People have heard this story before, but I'll reiterate it.
Please.
Friends of mine were on Facebook, and they invited me and tagged me in photos and did things like that so that I had this pseudo profile. I was on Facebook anyway, even though I chose not to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Right.
So I ended up joining Facebook simply so I control the narrative, as it were.
See, that's creepy. Yeah. I mean, in that all your friends made you do that.
Mm-hmm.
I did that to you, didn't I?
Were you one of those
friends? I was one of those people.
It was multiple friends. It was five different people, I think,
yeah.
that were all putting
pushing.
My email address in there.
Well, that's why it grew so fast, right? Absolutely why it grew so fast.
Yeah.
And so do we suggest everybody makes a profile so they can at least set the privacy settings really, really tight? Because that's the thing is that how do you control yourself online if other people are making comments about you? You can't really.
Yeah.
This is actually a security thing you brought up last week, which I thought was fascinating. It's the same type of thing. If you're a geek and can totally make your email completely secure so that everything's encrypted, your machine's locked down, everything's great. Trouble is all your communication is with someone else and you don't know what their security level is. So all the messages to those people, and that's all your communication. Right? Mm-hmm. Because you can't control everybody else. So Miles and I successfully today can set up complete secure communication that no one else can look at. Yay. But every other person I know, they can be read, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
welcome
it's not
to your
idea.
Island of two.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I want to thank Susie and Charlie Franklin. Because guess what happened, Bonnie?
Did we finally meet that matching gift?
Yes.
Oh, thank goodness.
I know. I'm very glad to hear that. We do have $720 left to go to meet the Geek Speak goal for this hour. We only have 4 more minutes to do it, so it's time to pick up the phone. As Bonnie said, you know what to do.
You know what to do, and here's the phone number, 888-777-1507. You can go to the website, kusp.org, which is secure, by the way.
That's nice.
That's to know. But whatever you can contribute, some amount per month, as you said at the beginning, Lyle, is fantastic. If you can do $10 a month, great.
If you're not sure you want to commit to a long-term engagement, give us $10, right? Just once.
Just do like a one-timer. You know?
Because what that does is that shows that you're listening and you're contributing, and it also shows you how good it feels. And I trust you, trust me, it'll feel great for that month of going, yeah, I'm supporting that station.
It's the dip the toe pledge.
Yeah, and it's not just Geek Speak, right? It's the everything we do here at the station. So even if you can't stand us and you're waiting for us to get off air, you can contribute to the entire station, and we do live off of that contribution. That's how we run. 888-777-1507. Miles.
And thank you so much to Tammy from Monterey. She is a new member.
Oh, thank goodness! Yay!
And Patricia from Watsonville.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Keith from Santa Cruz, and John from Santa Cruz, also a new member. Thank you so much.
Oh, we like those new ones. That's been one of the nice things about this end of the fiscal year campaign is the number of new members that we've seen go, oh, you know what? You've talked to me twice already in the past year, but I still haven't given, so let me just do that now. Thank you, thank you, thank you for taking this extra opportunity to become members of KUSP. It's super important that we have as many people as possible who actually listen to the program supporting it. So
yeah, and we get it. You're driving along and you are thinking, oh, I should pledge, but I'm driving right now. Would 5 extra minutes matter? Pull over, call the phone number on your cell phone, 1-888-777-1507. Make your pledge. It takes 5 minutes, even less sometimes.
Less. Oh, yeah, even less. Even less.
Then you get back on the highway again. You get back on that on-ramp and go on with your day.
You know, the Community Advisory Board of KUSP meets regularly and the public is invited to attend. So all of you can also contribute to the station with your physical presence. The next meeting is Monday beginning at 6:30 p.m. at the Watsonville Community Hospital Foundation, 85 Nelson Street in Watsonville. Call the station during business hours. You can actually call right now, too, if you want. We're all here. For more information, our numbers are, well, let's give the one number, 888-777-1507. And you will talk to somebody, and we'll ask you for your contribution. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. Miles, got one more minute. Got one more little news story can fill in?
Yes, I do. This is super cool. I was glad I'm able to get this. Large Hadron Collider. Cool thing. Test out physics experiments. Look for the God particle, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Turns out it's so sensitive that they have to track the phases of the moon because it will affect the outcome of their experiments.
Well, that's like another vote for biodynamics.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we all know that, you know, odd behavior comes out with the phase of the moon. Well, it doesn't really, but still, that's all.
Right. I think maybe it does.
Hey, Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence. We appreciate his use of it. We can find out more at geekspeak.org of everything we do, but please do spend the time now to give us a call or go to our website, 888-777-1507. Again, 888-777-1507 or www.kusp.org. Miles and Bonnie, thank you so much for joining me today.
And thank you to Anonymous in Santa Cruz.
Yay.
Coming up next is Car Talk, so don't leave. Thank you so much. I'll be here next week.